Good evening, everyone, and welcome to EP Healing and Explorations in Consciousness. This is Jackie Salvitti and my wonderful co-host, Veronica Entwistle. Hi, Ronnie.
Hi, Jackie. How
Hi,
you doing?
It's
crazy out there.
Yes, it's crazy out there, and I'm wimpy, but I'm here. So I felt it was important to put in an appearance so everybody knows that I haven't, like, kicked off. At any rate, very good to be with all of you. Love you all so much. And, of course, tonight's show is about loving ourselves. So I thought that was a very appropriate subject since I've certainly been dealing with this one at very deep levels.
You've been through a lot, Jackie.
I have. Thank you. Yeah, it's been a real interesting time. So, and show dedication is for all of you to really move into deeper levels of self-love. If there's anything at all, and I can tell you this one from the bottom of my heart, that this is a time where we must be loving to ourselves. With all the chaos out there and everything that's going on, it's imperative that we not be self-critical and be as loving as we can and learn to balance our lives in any way that I can. Because I'm the most unbalanced person in the world, so I can actually say this.
Oh, come on. Are you really? I doubt it.
Yeah, well, you know, 7 years I have taken no time off. So for 7 years, I you know, other than when I'm flat on my back. So I really, I would say, yeah. That's pretty damned unbalanced.
I guess the process of consciousness takes over everything, doesn't it?
I think that, and I was talking to darling Dr. Page, my wonderful chiropractor is one of them, and his wife is forcing him to go on vacation for the first time since he began his practice. And he said, Jackie, we are our work. And, you know, given our options, you know, we would just do it all the time. And I said, I know, it's terrible.
I know, when people talk about retirement, and I go, how can you retire?
What?
Kind of like retiring from being an artist or something. You can't
do
it.
Yeah, I mean, oh, please. But
it's
again,
beingness.
You know, I think that our excitement at the constant discoveries and all of the changes and everything, I think, Veronica, that we're in such awe of everything that's going on ourselves.
Yeah, I think I live a very gee whiz kind of life.
Exactly. And I think it's almost impossible to just really check out and say, well, gee, I think I'll just lay around today. And, you know, I'd love to say to you, well, I do that whenever I feel like I absolutely do not. You know, the death sentence for me is, you will lay on the couch. And I'm like, no.
Then if you are, you'd probably be talking to your guides anyway. Are you?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely. It's just, it's insane. I've had, for those who've had their sessions canceled, certainly they're aware that I had a week ago. What day is today? Thursday?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. This Saturday, it'll be 2 weeks ago, that I had people in town and I was out shopping and having a wonderful time and came home, went out to dinner with my girlfriend and some other people, another woman, and went to the restroom and started to hemorrhage. And I do mean hemorrhage. I mean, you know, I hear the term, we talk about the term, we really don't know what that term means until you're actually hemorrhaging. And it's, there is nothing you can do and there is nowhere you can go. And so I am pretty stubborn and, you know, I'm always a believer that I can change everything. This is really what's so damn funny about this whole thing. Is that, you know, I was just so convinced that the idea, and of course this was my greatest fear. So I see the beauty behind all of this. was A, giving up control.
You don't have to do that, do you, Jackie?
Oh, my God. And and actually having to ask for help because there was nothing that I could do. And they got me home, and at that point, I was in screaming pain.
Oh,
and perspiring right through my hair, and I mean, it was so unbelievable. And I'm not trying to make people feel bad listening to this. It's just, it was one of those things where if I lived in entitlement, I would, you know, be looking at the team going, "What in the hell are you doing? You know? Where are you?" But I really don't go there, and I absolutely refused to go to the hospital. And finally, my son, they called my son, and he called an ambulance. And I was locked. I'd locked myself in the bathroom and with just piles of towels, and I'm just bleeding and bleeding and bleeding and bleeding. And so the, I don't know what they call them, but the fellow on the ambulance knocked on the door, and he said, "Miss," and of course, I'm in my underwear. And he said, "Could you just show me how much you've bled?" And you know, I'm clinical anyway, and I'm sure you are as well, Veronica. You know, with the work we do, you could become very clinical. You know, if somehow you kind of move into a whole other state.
Yeah, you're not afraid to talk about the most intimate things.
Oh, heck no! So I pulled out this huge trash can, just loaded with things that were soaked in blood, and he was like, "In what period of time?" I said, "I think 10 minutes." He said, "Ma'am, I can't force you to go, but if you don't come with me now, you're going to die."
Oh my
and
God.
I was like, "Oh shit!" So, at any rate, and that was the beginning of 5 days in the hospital, most of which I remember nothing,
oh, wow.
other than the screaming pain, and
oh.
which nothing seemed to be able to stop the pain. And that was that and the fact that I, being who I am, I can't do medicine. You know, I have a hard enough time with antibiotics. But for me, they're like poison. But to do painkillers and things, that just, because the girls had given me 2 painkillers, which I promptly threw up in the ambulance.
Mm.
And... And
so did you have to go the whole time without painkillers?
No. They kept pumping me full of anything and everything they could.
Mm.
Because it was a little disturbing for the hospital, you know, to have anybody screaming in that much pain. And medicine says you can stop pain, you know. Well, I think what I really came to the conclusion of is that I'm so much more of an ET than I'm a human,
mm-hmm.
that my body will not accept nor respond in a normal way to any form of medicine. And the funny part was that I kept trying to make a run for it, and I kept screaming that if I stay, I was going to die. So every time anybody would turn their head for a moment, I'd jump out of bed and go running down the hall. And I would rip everything out of my arms and everything, and it was not, I mean, this was not a pretty situation by any
stretch. Do you remember running out, or is that when you were
No,
safe?
I don't remember any of it. And, you know, it's kind of a standing joke in the family that you never give mom painkillers. You know, if I go in for anything, I get 1.5 to 2 tablets of whatever they would normally give you anything of, just enough to get me through, you know, the first couple of hours. After that, I don't want anything because I know my body can't handle it. And I go out of my, I'm literally out of my mind. So, anyway, it was a very interesting, and the interesting part was nobody could account for, I've read some of the reports, and I had this huge hematoma in my bladder, but nobody could really account for why there was such a huge hematoma, blah, 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 blah. And what was amazing is my daughter really jumped in and took over, and she was aware of things. Huh?
Bless her heart.
Oh, and she was aware of things that I, it really shows how unconscious I am. I'm so concerned about all my clients, I don't think about a lot of things, and she was explaining, and she was telling them what to do, you know, get that catheter out. She's allergic to latex. She's allergic to plastic. She can't have this. She can't have that. Undo this. And everything she told them to do calmed me down.
Wow.
So, and she was right on every count, which I thought was really pretty amazing. So, considering she has zero medical background, but she's had her own things that she's gone through. So anyway, it was a very interesting time. I left there pretty beat up because they had me strapped in my bed because they couldn't trust me.
Hide her down, did they?
So, what it all turned out to be is that I am allergic to the sling that they put around my bladder. And I would never have found out without all of this. It could have certainly been a lot more elegant, but evidently it was the only way I was going to find out. And that's what's been creating all these problems for whatever. So that has to be taken out and then something totally different put in. And I'm not doing that here in Las Vegas. I'm going back to California to a wonderful doctor there who I trust implicitly. But it's been a, and the ETs cannot go in. When you put something artificial into your body, they cannot do anything about that. This is not magic wand time. You know, they can't, when they're dealing with your original equipment, that's one thing. When they're dealing with man-made materials, totally different.
Hmm.
Especially plastics and synthetics.
They don't deal with those fabrics?
They can't, no, they can't undo them. This is not something that can be done. And so this is why, I mean, I learned an awful lot through all of this. Now, through all of this, which I thought was really fascinating, I started having communication with the gray, which of all the damn times, this was not what I expected. And they came in this beautiful, loving way and asked, and for those, many of you know that I've talked about the abduction detainment sessions that the team does. It's a one-time thing and very loving to kind of undo the screened memories and the emotional trauma in the emotional body. And it takes a couple of months for it to kind of all unwind. I don't know how it works. It just works. That's all I know. And so we do go aboard a gray ship in order for people to encounter their hybrid children if they have any. That's our kind of meeting place, okay? That's our agreed-upon meeting place, for lack of a better way to put it. And it's a beautiful experience for people. And Veronica, you went. And, of course, Miss Curious, she wanted to go all the way through the ship, you know. If you recall, you're watching the ponds they had in there and the babies and the...
Yes. but funnily enough, the most striking thing I remember is it looks so familiar.
Well, of course.
Yeah, that surprised me, actually.
Well, okay. And here's the information that's been coming through, which has been really fascinating. And, you know, since I have never gone this long without doing sessions, in 7 years, it has created a window of opportunity for information to come through and communications to come through.
Great. Wonderful.
Yeah, right.
So you're on holiday, are you, girl?
Oh, yeah, exactly. And notice I didn't say Paris or Rome. It's time, and it hasn't really been time up until now for a lot of this information to come through. It is very much time now for a planetary healing in terms of what the agendas have been and why. And unfortunately, I don't want to offend people who do regressive hypnosis, and this does not include Dolores Cannon, because she goes to the somnolistic state, which is the deepest state of regressive hypnotherapy, and has yet to ever have anyone have a negative encounter at that level. Ever.
Hmm. Interesting.
It is interesting. Mm-hmm. And so what happens during traditional hypnotherapy is that you're still experiencing the fear and also the when you're moving through subconscious to conscious state, you know, you have this kind of a transference of information where it's trying to fit into, like a Rubik's Cube, you're trying to fit stuff from here into here, and it doesn't really fit, so it'll find the closest notch.
Hmm.
And so this is why so many people have these very garbled kind of experiences, you know, in the dream state and so on and so forth. And this is why there's so much symbology in all of it. You know, nobody has ever come to a full conclusion. You know, you hear, well, in the dream, you're everything, and this, I mean, no matter what you read, everybody's got an opinion.
Right.
And so, you know.
Kind of like a democracy.
Yeah. So, at any rate, and on the new website, there is a piece that I wrote at their request about, I didn't go into massive detail, but I went into enough detail and tried to show great respect for everybody that is working in this arena, because there are a lot of people who are doing regressive hypnosis and hitting a lot of terror and fear stuff. That evidently there was a movie, my son had me watch it, that came out, I don't know, relatively recently. It was on pay-per-view, and it was, the story, it was actually a true story of this woman and the people in this town that were all having experiences, and it was so shocking to them. Some of them killed themselves or while under hypnosis actually went into such terror that they damaged themselves, one snapped their own neck. I mean, this was some pretty heavy-duty stuff.
What's
so
it called?
I'm sorry, for the life of me, I do not remember the name.
Okay.
I will look it up, and or try to. At any rate, there certainly has been, and you know, this goes back to Dr. John Matt, and when John did the professor of psychiatry at Harvard, who the last 10 years of his life, I've said this many times, you know, devoted his life to the abduction phenomena and our detainment. And he traveled all over the world speaking to all kinds of people, including, and I don't know what you would call them, people that are native to particular areas, including in Africa and everywhere.
Indigenous people,
thank you. Indigenous people and their experiences, and many of them were very angry and so on and so forth. In their coming forward to me, it was really with a great deal of, I don't even know if I have a language for it, because the request was, I could feel it at a deep heart level, even though they don't have a tremendous emotional body. But it was coming through it in a way that was so sincere. And asking for me to work with people, you know, I'm assuming they want me to do like conferences, whatever. with groups of people who have had these experiences to help move them out of the fear and the trauma and heal it so that they can go forward with an understanding that, and without the damage, the trauma, and the pain. Because now I have a whole family of abductees. I'm one, my kids are both, you know, my grandchildren and my great-grandson. So, you know, I no question in my mind. I don't know if you've explored that at all, Veronica, with your daughter or...
I have not.
It's interesting because especially my grandchildren are aware, not my oldest, but my two younger ones.
How do you awaken people to those memories? Do you do that?
Actually, we do a process that triggers, very lovingly triggers, something within the person. We go back to childhood, and it triggers something within the person, and their body starts to vibrate. They start getting that feeling of knowing they're coming, and it's something that all children experience. And this is what has created the shame, the separation, the anger at parents, the sense of abandonment and betrayal at parents that they can't really identify. Many times, you know, I'm sure you've found the same thing in talking to people about their parents. If you get into the discussions about abandonment and betrayal and so on, and they try to come up with the reasons why they have these strong feelings. And it's very interesting without realizing that it's couched, actually, oftentimes in these experiences, because the children feel so separate, they are getting the message they're not to tell anybody. And yet they know when they're coming. And they have this fear and trauma, and they're crying out, don't make me, you know, stay in the dark, don't make me go to bed, don't make me stay in this room. And of course, parents, you know, understandably, you know, little Johnny, Mary, whoever, you know, look, it's bedtime, you go to bed. You don't need the light on, your blah, blah, blah age, you know. But when in fact they are having these incredibly traumatic experiences, and they'll either come in through the closet or through the window. But that's translated, even though the memories are screened. And they literally screen them in the conscious memory. But the emotional trauma is still in the body. And the associated emotions of fear, rage, separation, shame, lots of shame, because they feel so separate, so different. And many times these children will pull away from other children or act out. And
the greatest clue is the fact they hate going to bed and they don't want to do the light off.
Fear of light, fear of turning it, fear of sleeping in the dark,
mm-hmm.
Fear of the closet. I mean, if you take a child, now, and here's where it gets iffy, because lots of children have nightmares. Many children come back feeling that this is a nightmare. And yet, when they're coming again, the children know. They have this internal knowing. It's a knowing. You talk to an abductee if you really work with them and gain their confidence. And somehow they know they're coming. And I don't remember the fellow's name in Switzerland.
Billy Myers.
Yeah. And he always knew when they were coming, and they would, you know, send messages to him and so on and so forth. Well, basically, they do the same thing with the children.
But why is it some just love it and some don't? You know, is it
I really think it several things. I mean, that's a really broad question. Good question, but a broad question. For some children who are in very, and it's really, really been interesting to me over all these thousands of sessions, the majority of the children that had the experiences were in traumatic households anyway. Mm-hmm. So they were already dealing with their own forms of trauma. And some of them extreme trauma. I mean, I even remember as a child my fear of the closet.
I also had that.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I still make sure it's closed at night.
Isn't that interesting? Well, you know, I literally was afraid to be alone. Literally was afraid to be alone until, God, I have to stop and think. Oh, probably till 7 years ago. And I live in a big house. You know, I don't have that fear anymore. But I got a house full of beings, so, you know, it's like, it's not even a consideration. It's like Grand Central Station, so I don't. Now,
So were you an abductee when you were small?
Actually, the first night, the day that I met Adrian DeVere when he gave his talk, and the ET came back, darling Dean came back with me to the room and walked right through the door, and I laughed all week that she was upstairs trying on my clothes. She was so funny, and it was Euroka who came to be part of my team, who is on restriction most of the time because she's just, oh, she's a brat. And that night I was taken before this huge council. And they laid out my entire life in my first abduction, which I thought was a molestation by three little boys, which, of course, turned out not to be three little boys. That was three little ETs. And I never understood why nothing was ever done about it. And, of course, the reason it wasn't is because they never did anything. And I always knew I had a tracking device on my arm from the time I was about 6 or 7. And especially when I was going through the period where I was afraid of the closet and I was in a particular foster home. But I knew I had this thing in my arm. And then it got very, very active just before all this started. And I used to tell my girlfriend Kathleen we'd be on the golf course. And it literally would start glowing. It would get hot and swell up, and the heat coming off of it was amazing. And I'd say, look, feel, you know, we're on screen. And then she'd laugh at me and say, and yeah, you're watching yourself, you know. you know, to me it became more humorous. But what was interesting is during this meeting as they laid out my life, why I had chosen to do the things I did and why I chose to take on the things I took on. It was so, I mean, it went on all night long, and when I woke up, I was just crying. I woke up crying because I was so, I was in such a state of awe and gratitude for the knowledge. And then I jumped in the shower, went downstairs, found Adrian DeVere and told him, and he grabbed his chest and blanched backwards. He was a big man, so this was a, and he said, oh, my God, the same thing happened to me the first time. And I said, wow. Mm. And so we knew, you know, that there was this bond between us that was very strong. What's been interesting, and this has been coming up but prior to my little episode, my checking out for a while, I did a session with somebody who all of you know, who wanted to go back because she had some anger come up around it, and she'd never felt the anger before, and she knows she has ET children and or hybrid children, and wanted to go aboard ship. And wanted to re-experience whatever had upset her. And so we took, this is the first time we've ever done this, where we actually took her through a full abduction experience at her, not only request, it was command. You know, this is what I want. I want to know why. And what was fascinating during the session, and I could see them, was that the grays were doing the work. She saw one other race standing behind. And the team asked, are you aware of others in the room? And do you know who they are? And she described, but there were even others besides them. Mm-hmm. And the team did not press it forward. So the grays, in essence, have been doing a lot of work for a lot of other races because they've had permission to kind of come and go on the planet.
Why?
Well, they made arrangements with governments, for one thing.
Mm.
Okay. But they've been doing this for our history. If you look back, if any of you have been watching Ancient Aliens, the depictions are very much of the grays going back thousands of years.
Hmm.
You know, they've been, now, they are from, in essence, they are us. They are a potential parallel reality.
Hmm.
And they have come back, even though they are now, you know, from Zeta Reticuli, but they are a potential parallel, and this kind of gives you an idea when we talk about beings coming back from the future, what a huge future we're talking about, that they took up residence on Beta Reticuli, which is quite far away. And because of things that happened on Earth. And a lot of what they've been doing is trying to save. They have, you know, everything that has died on our planet, every species of everything, they have taken cutting DNA, etc., trying to save every single thing that we've been killing off.
Oh, my.
So they have been doing a tremendous amount of work. One of the biggest problems, of course, has been that people's experience with them is one, you bring humans together with another race, and it can feel very uncomfortable. I've had it happen. The frequencies are they border on painful because they're so intense. Just bringing the frequencies together in the same room. So if you can imagine, it could be incredibly frightening. Okay, and there are small children that don't have the fear. They start out with many of them very young, and many of them don't go into the fear. They understand, you know, but again, it's like having two lives. It's like splitting them and creating this dual reality for them where they are living two lives, and it creates a sense of separation. As I'm watching my great-grandson, how separate he feels from everybody, even when my granddaughter goes to get him at daycare, he is always by himself. He is always taking things apart and putting them back together. My son just broke through to where he will let my son hold him and feed him. And my son's been up there every couple of weeks since he was born. So it's very, very, very interesting. And, of course, I've talked before about their relationship with him is really quite strong. Mm. Quite strong. A lot of his education, a lot of his has all taken place through them. Very, very interesting. But the...
This is your grandson, your great-grandson.
Great-grandson.
Mm-hmm.
The loving part of this is that finally they're wanting us to know the truth, that we are them and they are us.
Mm.
That's going to be a hard one, for I think, for a lot of people to kind of take in. So they are not the same as, let's say, the Syrians or some of the other races. Okay, they are us from another. This has been the question, and I, you know, as John Mack did his research, you know, there were different scientists that said, you know, we don't even know what dimension they come from. And they don't. Okay, because of their ability to just pop in and out.
Mm-hmm.
And...
But they get some pretty negative PR, don't they? They get some pretty bad rap.
Well, you know, one session Dolores had with a woman where she swore they burned her breast, and she took her under into the somnambulistic state. And they actually were doing some surgery on her and brushed against, they were fixing something on her, and brushed against her breast by mistake. And she, because the frequencies were so different, to her, it felt like she was being burned.
Hmm.
So that's what she brought back with her. So, yes, they do get a lot of negative press.
But now, their abductions aren't always cruel or like you're saying.
That is not really the intent. The intent is not to be cruel.
Hmm.
Okay? They are trying to, whatever they do here, and can help us with here is going to change the future. And this is something as humans that we really have to stretch to understand and to be able to comprehend and realize. You know, and the team has been saying this all along. What we're doing right now is changing everything. And it is. There are many reptilians who are participating as well. We tend to have more fear of the reptilians than we do of the gray, I think, as a race. And that's built in because of some things that have happened in the past and some manipulation to our DNA and so on and so forth. But there are other races involved. When John Mack, and I was with him at that Q&A, at the screening of his film, Touched in San Francisco. There were about 50 people. And one of John's, I don't even remember the question that was posed to him, but one of his answers was, many of my patients see me aboard ship when they're abducted. Now, I have to tell you, and it was very interesting, Natalia was here visiting, and she said, why is John Mack around you? And I started giggling because I was writing this thing on abductions and detainment. And I said, because he's really pushing me right now, I never planned on doing this. It never really was my focus. It's kind of been shoved into my corner and shoved into my corner, and now it's being really shoved out there and saying, okay, it's now time for greater understanding. So that, because anytime we feel separate from anything, it's going to be reflected in our reality. And
can I ask a question?
You can ask me anything you want. If I can answer it, I will. It doesn't mean I'll have an answer, but I'll sure try.
Well, I'm going to ask something that we're going to talk about on one of my shows soon is, how do people know when the in quotes, ET around them is a safe, kind being?
There is a wonderful answer to this.
Oh, good.
And it's simple. You flood it with love. And whoever is standing there at the moment, if you flood it with love, will change into a lifetime experience that matches your vibration. Did that make sense to you?
I think so.
In other words, let's say you have, and John actually wrote about this. It was in the, I believe, the second to the last chapter of his book, Abduction. He was so close. He was so close before he left. Mm-hmm. And he does bug me. I know that. But God bless him. I love him so much, so it's fine. But he was so close because this woman who was having an experience with an angry reptilian, as he wrote, had the presence of mind to flood it with love. And when she did, it changed into a gray and then into a tall blonde Nordic.
Hmm. Would that be a Pleiadian or actually a humanoid?
Well, no. It would be of another race. It potential Pleiadian. It could be many, many different races. But let's assume that it was a... of Pleiadian origin, probably. And I say probably because I can't be sure. You know, I'm not there, so I really don't know. And I didn't see an actual description. But the fact that it was tall, it was a Nordic, possibly Pleiadian. So, but you have to remember that the truth is, especially right now, you know, one time on my website I had 10 million races, and they had me change that to 5 million. As I'm preparing the new website, and, you know, I was checking every single detail today with the team, saying, okay, is this right? Is this right? Is this right? Do I need to modify this? Do I need to change that? And they had me tone it down for a reason, because they want people to understand, to be able to grasp things, because when you use these huge numbers, they don't make sense. Sense to humans how many races can be involved, because we see our universe from a linear perspective. We don't see bubble upon bubble upon bubble upon bubble. We don't see how you can jump from universe to universe to universe to universe. So, i.e. multiverse. So, in addition to that, past, present, and future of all these races. You're not dealing with something that's only in your timeline. But because we're still operating with this little, you know, 10% of our brain, maybe 11 if we're lucky now, you know, it's really hard when you start going into the exponential concept. When we're functioning on such a in such a linear space of linear ideas, linear concepts, and then try to step outside of that and into multidimensional concepts, you know, which is how we can run into other versions of ourselves. Because, you see, the question I would say is, how would we know if an ET showed up and it was very negative, that we weren't, in fact, dealing with another version of ourselves from another time? Or place. And the answer really is you don't.
Literally meeting yourself coming.
And going.
Have you experienced that, Jackie?
I'll put it this way. I will say that there is a much flatter-chested version of me running around out there that others have encountered, and which makes me laugh. Because God knows I'm not short on boobage, but you know, as I get older, I kind of envy the flatter-chested version of me. It's less to mess with. And
do you think we can call in and get to know all of those other versions of ourselves?
I think when we're ready, yes, of course. I think we'll be able to jump from lifetime to lifetime, from experience to experience. That's part of where we're going anyway, to be able to work in concert with. But we can't get there until we can figure out how to get along and take care of and love what we got here.
Mm-hmm.
How the hell are we going to love and embrace something that's different than what we are when we can't accept what we've got right now?
That's a good point.
I mean, I don't think I've ever spent so much time naked as I did in that 5 days. You know, and I mean, obviously, you know, I mean, everybody saw my body parts were on display. I mean, under normal circumstances, I would have been horrified, you know, that my children were in there, my son and blah, blah. I could give a flying rip, which I thought was really interesting, that it didn't bother me. Which, you know, I'm either detached or shut down. I'm not sure which.
Well, your priorities must shift a little when you're just trying to make your life work somehow.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, even in retrospect, you know, you would think, oh, but I it really didn't bother me.
Probably didn't bother them either. They had a big job to do.
Right. But, I mean, it's not the doctors and nurses. You don't think much about that. But other members of family and friends and stuff would be a little much.
Well, I was thinking how your family really pitched in for you. They were really working on their probably adrenaline and love.
They were really, well, and they were pumping huge amounts of fluid through my bladder, so I had constant people standing over me pumping gallons of water through my bladder and out into these big receptacles.
Mm.
And so, you know, my personality was on total display all the time.
Oh my.
And they weren't too careful about doing any draping. It was like, if you're in the room, too bad. So,
Pretty extreme, wasn't it?
You know, it was, yeah, it was very extreme. I think for me, what I encountered, and there were a lot of things, you know, I mean, it would be easy to be upset with or to blame or to, there's a lot of things that were done that we, had my daughter not been there, but she was, okay, but had she not been there, some real extreme situations could have occurred, and I'm very grateful that she was. I know I was blessed.
Mm.
I absolutely do. I'm a big person for dignity, though. I just, and this has been my big thing with allopathic medicine, is the dignity of the way that all humans should be treated. Everything should be treated with dignity. I don't care what it is. I have this, you know, that is, I know I'm becoming more and more of an ET every day, because that just is something that is very innate for me. And especially when people are incapacitated. But the, I don't have that on that subject, but anyway, back to loving ourselves, which is really, loving all of ourselves. Also loving and accepting those parts of ourselves that may fall short of what we would hope that they would be. I mean, I think the thing that bothered me the most is that I was screaming Mimi in there, and all I wanted to do was get out. I was convinced if I didn't, I was going to die. And that is so built into my psyche that human medicine is threatening for me.
Mm.
So I have to, and I've been very blessed that I've always had any encounter has been with beings that have treated me with a great deal of respect. Always, except in this particular situation. And I think, and that's only because my fear kicked in because I was in a place I didn't know. I didn't have a regular doctor. I had my urologist who absolutely was baffled. I mean, I felt so bad for him. He really didn't know what to do. And it was apparent. It was just like, oh my God, I feel so bad.
Do you think he's listening to the show?
I hope not. But if he is, I want him to know that I love him.
Oh.
And I totally understand that this was, it was just something very unique, and you just don't always know. What I have really learned is that nothing can go in my body that isn't, you know, that hasn't been muscle tested and so on, that my body will accept it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big deal. And I recommend that to all of you because we are changing so rapidly right now.
Mm-hmm.
That our ability to be compatible with a lot of materials are not that great. And if you start looking at all the recalls they're doing on hip replacements, knee replacements, all of these things have been developed.
Yeah, they're
and they're recalling
aren't
all
they?
Of them.
Wow.
Huh?
That's tremendous. I see it all the time.
Absolutely. And so you have to trust yourself. The one thing they did do when they did the transfusions, they let me bless the blood.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very, and I didn't have to say anything. They offered it to me. And they said, do you want to bless this before we put it in? And I said, thank you so much.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, I thought that was really wonderful.
Hmm.
It was still crappy blood, but that's okay.
But you're alive.
It was neutral. Yeah, right. I'm alive. Hey. I'm here, and I'm thrilled. And what I came out of this was so much love, which was fascinating to me. I came out of it with so much love. Love to my family. Love to my friends. Love for all the people that were in the hospital. Recognizing that they're all doing the best that they can. Our medicine on this planet is so, you know, I guess because I spend so much time, I know you do too, Veronica, working from a totally different perspective,
mm-hmm.
where dignity is such a very big issue in the work that we do with people. Trying to avoid having to go through a lot of these very difficult experiences. I can't explain why, but I came out of it feeling more loved than I've ever felt before, which I really find very paradoxical in some strange way.
Well, you had terrific advocacy of people, your family members supporting you and so on. I think the biggest nightmare is going in there and having no one to speak for you and no one to defend your.
Oh my God.
You in a time of vulnerability.
I really saw my daughter, which I thought was fascinating, how powerful she is on the other side of the veil.
Right.
And I told her if anything ever were to happen again, to look me in the eyes. Stop the insanity immediately. Get into my eyes and tell me that you're okay, that you've got control of it. And she said, Mom, that's exactly what I did to you. And as soon as I did, you let go. I said, thank you.
Wow, how wonderful. So we have to pull this to an end, unfortunately.
Okay, talk about your shows, darling.
All right, I'm going to do a rerun on Tuesday night on Paradigm Shifters. We're going to do John Gray's interview from a couple of years ago, and actually talking about respect and dignity. It's really a wonderful
Great.
Way to talk about the dignity between people in relationship.
Beautiful. So, I'm all for that.
I am too.
Wonderful, and I think John Gray's a great guy.
I do too, and I just reheard it recently and went, this is good. It needs to be played again.
Absolutely.
And Thursday night, we'll be back on. I've been talking a little bit about sound and music and resonant therapy, and I think we'll continue with that next Thursday at 7 o'clock. Thank
Wonderful.
You.
And I'm in total agreement with music. I absolutely agree. with all my heart and soul about that.
Wonderful.
I will be working as of Monday, and I do want to thank all of you who stood by so kindly as I've had to cancel sessions. And I will get everybody in just as quickly as I can, and I thank you so much for your patience and your love. And your understanding. And I will say, whatever's coming, going to come through now. God, you know, buckle up your seatbelts. You know, they told me recalibration, 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 and I'm just thinking, oh my God.
On top of that, we've got the ninth, the Mayan calendar ninth wave that started yesterday, and
exactly
Aries Uranus connection tomorrow or the day after tomorrow.
March, and I just want to say this quickly. March is a tough month for everybody. It should ease up around the 20-21st, from what I can tell. But this is a month a lot of things not quite coming together, and chaos, and things are very speeded up and very busy, but feeling like you're not getting things to click, and it will all start to come together. A lot of people feeling a lot of pressure.
And rapid pressure, like boing, boing, boing.
Yes. Most important thing, no matter what's going on around you, be loving with yourself. Veronica and I love you. We thank you so much for tuning in. And please remember that each and every one of you are a part of us, and we're a part of you. It can be no other way. We really are all one. Good night, everybody. Night, Ronnie. I love you.
Love you, love you, Jackie. Glad you made it through really well.
Oh, thank you. Me too.
Good night, everyone.